I'm Kristen Marchand, and this is the Opiongo Line, a podcast dedicated to the local heritage and unique culture of the Upper Madawaska and Opiongo River Valleys here in Eastern Ontario, Canada. Today, we're joined by the host of The Local, Sean Conway, who has three interesting guests and all talking not just hockey, but a particular brand of local ice hockey that happens here usually in the first weekend of spring. In fact, this year, it's happening again this coming weekend. It's called the Opiongo Heritage Cup, a tournament when young and old, men and women, all get to play hockey. But to qualify to get into a game, well, let's just join Sean and find out why not just anybody can play for the Opiongo Heritage Cup.
I'm delighted to welcome three friends for a conversation about hockey. My guests today are David Schulist, founder of the Heritage Cup, and an old friend and colleague of mine from the Madawaska Wolves hockey era, in our case, David and I, of the late 1960s. Marie Villeneuve, founder of the MVDHS Women's Wolverine Hockey Team, and someone well known to many of you because she is still a very active supporter of women's hockey in the Madawaska Valley. And thirdly, Dan Conway, coach and general manager of the Irish Shamrock hockey team, local sports writer, and as far as I can tell, fully engaged in provoking Toronto Maple Leaf hockey fans from far and wide. Marie and David and Dan, thank you very much for joining me for this conversation. And I want to start with you, David Schulist, because I want to begin the conversation focusing on the Heritage Cup. Can you start with a historical recollection of where the idea for the Heritage Cup came from? Because I know you were very much involved and you were there at the creation.
Well, listen, very good question, Mr. Conway. You know, where it all started was really my passion for heritage and, of course, sports. You know yourself how I love sports, even going to high school and that. The seed was planted in 1997. That is when I discovered my Kashubian roots and ancestry. Then in 1998 came along the Wilno Heritage Society, and then we became the place where we would promote the Kashubian heritage in Wilno. And so we created a heritage park and a museum. Now, at the same time, there was other groups. Kamimir Heritage Group was doing something. Zerkowski Park and Killu Heritage Society were having their own projects. And there's always been talk about, fundraisers, while we were building. But everybody was so busy that that we didn't have any time for fundraisers. So then in, I think it was in 2005, I had an idea, something I was thinking about for a long time, thought of a hockey tournament that would promote our local heritage. For me, it was a perfect fit. My two passions coming together, heritage and sports. I asked the four heritage groups if they would be interested in running a heritage hockey tournament where all proceeds would go to their heritage groups and their projects. They were all on board. Each group took a task. One group ran the door admission, one the raffles, board games, another cultural foods and bar and dance. Now, I got the position as commissioner, and my job was to get heritage teams on the ice, set the rules, govern the rules, and take care of promoting the event. The first thing I had to do was name the event, so I selected the name Opiongo, because the players selected to play on the teams were descendants of the first pioneers who came up the Opiongo line in the 1800s. I created this slogan, proud to be Canadian and proud of our cultural roots. Because I used hockey to promote heritage, I also added the phrase, hockey is our vehicle and diversity is our fuel. So in 2006, reality, our first Opiongo Heritage Cup was born. And there you go. I hope that's short enough.
So it was about 8 or 9 years in gestation, and the first Heritage Cup was, you said, 2006?
Correct.
Well, thank you very much for that. Mm-hmm. And before I turn to Dan Conway, I want to give Marie Villeneuve an opportunity to tell us how she got involved in all of this. And for a radio audience that can't see Marie's very colorful sweatshirt, I guess it is. Did you just bring that to make Dan Conway feel like he had a friend in the world? Because for the audience out there, if you read one of the local Madawaska Valley newspapers, you'll know that Dan is a sometimes columnist and full-time provocateur for the Montreal Canadiens. And Marie looks like she's prepared to wave that same flag and today right in front of Dan Conway. So Marie, welcome to the conversation. And how did you get involved? And how did you bring all those very talented young women to the ice surface?
Well, thanks very much, Sean. My Habs fan base comes from my dad, who was a diehard Habs fan. I remember as a young kid watching hockey, whether I liked it or not, and it was just something I loved to do. Now, moving forward, it wasn't something back in the 70s we could do because girls just didn't play hockey and minor hockey wasn't open to girls anyways. And then the story evolved after that when I approached my guidance counselor and we talked about it and anyways, got girls hockey going.
And who was that guidance counselor?
Actually, Bill Hull Sr., and he was always about, what are you going to do with your life? Well, we got into that conversation, and his question was, well, what do you really want to do? And I said, I want to play hockey. And he said, well, make it happen. Well, how am I going to do that? And he said, well, let's talk about it. And he did. He was very instrumental in telling me what I had to do, and he proceeded to get his contacts. He actually got the jerseys from the MV Wolves. When they weren't playing, we got to borrow them. And so we played a few exhibition games. I guess that was to see if girls were interested. Well, we did pretty good that first year. It was short, but we did. And by the next year, he had spoke to a teacher in Eganville, René Sarah, and he actually donated a cup. And in no time at all, we had four teams. And we were ready to play the following year in 72.
That's right. So we're now 25 years before the Heritage Cup is even thought about, correct?
Yep. Yeah, we played. The first year we had a league with two from Pembroke, one from Renfrew and Barry's Bay. We played to a packed arena many, many times in the Old Grey Lady. Oh, yes, because we were unstoppable. We won the cup the very first year. That was pretty neat. And I continued to play hockey long after that. Many years went by. I played in some other different teams. And then I was approached by Dave Shulist about, they were going to open up a women's team at the Heritage Cup. So I was like, yeah, I'm not saying no. So anyway, so sort of went into, we got together some of the girls from the, Heritage group of Kashubian women to play in that first year in 2007. I did find that, it was a little out of my league. I was getting a little slow. So the following year, I sat out. But the next year, I took on a coaching job. And we won the first year that there was an individual women's team or a league or division. It was a women's division. And then I also coached the next year, but we lost in the final game. So
let me just go back a moment or two. I am really pleasantly surprised to hear that way back in the 1970s, a women's hockey team filled the old Barry's Bay Arena.
You know what? I wish we would have had pictures because we did. We had a bus that would take us to our out-of-town games for spectators to come with the girls.
Wow. I mean, Dave will remember playing with the Wolves in the late 60s, and we were kind of expecting, in playoff season at least, we could fill the old place. But if you had told me, and this just may indicate that I'm just an old-time sexist, the idea of a women's hockey team filling the arena, that must have made some of the men around here a bit nervous about new competition on the ice.
Well, we weren't as fast, but we were good. And we certainly were entertaining. If you ever read some of the archives from from the Barry's Bay this week, we were a team to be reckoned with. I mean, we weren't some of these women, especially some of the ones from Pembroke. The teams, they didn't like us winning all the time, and there was a few scraps. We have actually the podcast I did last year with Judy Whalen. She was holding the penalty minutes there for a couple of years there with, you know.
I'm shocked to hear that about Judy.
Hey, that can tell you more stories from some of the other quieter girls.
But, you know, when I do think about it, those were the years when I was away at university, and women's hockey was beginning to take flight in colleges and universities, and now it's absolutely first-rate quality and tremendous support and attention. So, all right, well, thank you very much for that. Now to our last contributor, Coach for 14 years, Coach General Manager for the Shamrock Irish, I think it was, Dan Conway. How did you get involved in all of this?
First of all, Sean, I wasn't coaching.
Oh, you were never the coach. Oh, the general. No. Sorry, you were Punch Imlach. No, you were... Well, Punch was both coach and general manager.
Sam Pollock.
So you were the general manager of the Shamrock Irish. So how did you get involved, you being such a shy, you know, quiet fellow?
Well, thanks, Sean. First of all, before I answer that, for you young folks that don't realize, Marie Villeneuve was one of the top female hockey players to ever come out of this area.
Here, I can believe that. 100%. I was just reading her press.
That's got nothing to do with her being a half then. Dave came and approached me in the early fall of 2005. Told me what he wanted to do and his plans, and if I'd be interested, along with Bernie Finucane, as being part of it. And I thought, wow, what a cool idea. I didn't even hesitate. I said, yeah, and I answered for Bernie, yes, right away. And just went from there. One thing I want to mention is, you know, trying to find Irish players in a Polish/Kashub, it was Polish back then, Dave, sorry, community was difficult. And I couldn't believe the number of players I approached to play that said, oh, I'm sorry, we're German, I can't play for the Irish. And we had to go back to some of the grandfathers to convince them what they were. So if it wasn't for Dave and his heritage tournament, other than the hockey, so many people have no idea what their heritage is. So thumbs up to you on that one, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Well, can I just stop right there? Because, you know, I spent half a lifetime in politics. And one of the things you learn in politics is that when you start touching on, you know, ethnic sensitivity, shall I say, I'm trying to find the right phrase here, it can be like, sometimes like milking a porcupine. Mm-hmm. Very careful you should be.
Or religion.
Absolutely.
Or religion. And of course, ethnicity incorporates the religious divide. So let me ask, well, Dan, do you want to, let me, you can finish and then I want to get to Dave on that. Mm. Was there, how much concern was there when you started down this road that we better be careful here? Because competitive hockey, if you grew up in the Madawaska Valley, as we all did, I just remember what it was like as a kid walking down the street here to the old Grey Lady, as the old arena is called, and Whitney was in town, or Douglas was in town for baseball.
Let me tell you,
you took your life into your hands. So here you are putting it all on the table right up front. We're going to be the, you know, the German team, the indigenous team, the Polish Kashubian team, the Irish team. Boy, you got a bunch of people in the arena.
Even though we were all friends, when it came down to the hockey end of it, there's no friendship. You want to win when you put that team on the ice. Every player that ever laced up skates is out there to win. They're not out for a public skate. So it was very competitive from day one. But the hardest one thing, like I said, was trying to convince some people who they were.
David, what about you from the point of view of giving birth to this, essentially, coming up with the idea that then became the reality? Did you ever worry at any point this could be a little delicate?
Yeah, when I was talking about this before we started, I did have some feelers out there, and, you know, everybody was sort of worried is, you know, maybe there'll be a feud between one culture and another, so on. And I said, well, you know, we won't know until we try it. And one of the things we did right from the beginning, and Dan, you were part of it, and all the general managers, is we set some good rules in that, yes, it's going to be fair hockey being played, very competitive. But we made some rules if there was any fighting, they would be kicked out of this tournament for life. Intent to injure is also a matter that would be taken into consideration. And we did have a couple of players that were banned from this tournament because we really wanted to control this. But overall, their passion for playing for their culture was really, you know, forefront in this whole thing. And even the first time that we did it, we saw no problem.
So let me ask you then, David, as commissioner, take us back to opening day, opening night of that first tournament in 2006. What are your memories of that?
Wow. Can I remember that far back? Well, there was excitement. What I was surprised at was how many people actually showed up to see this, right? And how proud they were. Their national flags out there, you know, waving, you know, families coming in and enjoying the game of hockey, you know, through heritage. To me, it just touched me. I didn't actually realize it was going to be that way. But Dan, you remember, I mean, the place was packed, right?
The first couple of years, I never saw so many flags in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, the last few years, it's not quite as drastic with flags, but there'd be kids running up along the boards waving flags when a goal was scored. It was just crazy wild.
What's the rated capacity of the Paul J. Yakubuski Arena? Is it about 1,800?
Well, you mean for the fans? No. I think it'd be close to about 650, 700.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but now
with standing room.
Then, of course, you got standing.
Yeah, the standing room.
So you can add a few there.
Yeah.
But you also have upstairs, you have behind the glass and so on. So, you know, I don't know, maybe the number is 900, 1,000. I really don't know.
I would think that's pretty close to
I remember going there on a number of occasions, and it was packed, absolutely packed.
And trying to find a parking spot.
Yeah. The So what was the capacity of the old gray lady? Because they were hanging from the rafters there.
You had both sides there.
Yeah, that's right. You did. Because I always assumed it was about at least 1,200. I mean... Yeah. And you counted
it's probably pretty close.
Well, let's just say that it's 1,200 because really, if you look at it, a lot of people are standing. They won't even sit down. They want to be, and then, yeah.
There's three or four deep standing, too.
So did you have any idea what the crowd might be for opening game of opening season? Did you think you might get as good a crowd as you got?
Well, an opening night, it's to capacity, I would say. Right, Danny?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, without a question.
Yeah.
And the thing
it's
about
still pretty close to capacity.
Yeah.
So
you know, throughout the weekend, actually, almost. Well,
everybody says, you know, oh, it's going to end. You won't get the crowds this year. You won't get the crowds that year. But I'm sure Marie and Dave will agree.
Mm-hmm.
Folks around here are all sports fans.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, I don't want to say they're starved for entertainment. But for a lot of people who can't afford to go to an NHL game, this is the best hockey they're ever going to see. So to be live...
Yeah,
it's amazing. So I don't think the crowds will suffer at all.
Yeah, I want to add something else to Dan, if you don't mind, and Sean Marie, is that it just happened when we started this hockey tournament in 2006. We were bidding for Hockeyville. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Yeah.
And you know what? Part of our video
Kraft Hockeyville that we see on Hockey Night in Canada.
Yes.
Right. Sorry. Yes. Go ahead.
And so we made an application in there, and the community rallied, and it just happened that we could have used some footage from the Heritage Cup. And did it make a difference? It probably did. At least we had some material to show that we are hockey.
Did we not get
down
to the bottom five in that day?
What's
that? We were in the
bottom five, right? We won our division.
Yeah. So we here in Barry's Bay are Hockeyville, right? And you know, I felt actually very good about the idea that they're using footage from our Heritage Cup. So
well, it's one of a kind.
So let me then, Marie. Did I understand you to say that your women's team was part of that first season?
No, we didn't come in until 2007.
Tell me about that, because you weren't there, and maybe did you get any olive branch of interest from the men, or were they so terrified that you might show up and show them up?
Well, actually, it's interesting because I, when there was no hockey left, I had a family and stuff, and then I was approached to play with chicks hockey. Okay, so I was like, yeah, I'll play hockey. No, I ended up on the ice with a lot of people that were still struggling to skate. But anyways, I had a lot of fun, taught them, you know, some of the basic rules. And I remember Dave, and of course, I've been at every Heritage Cup. For me, if it's hockey, I'm there. But Dave came one night on a Friday night we played and said, I'm thinking about putting, you know, a team of women in. I was like, can I, you know, be there? And going back to the heritage part, it was like, okay, my dad was French. My mom was German. But he said, you have some roots. Yeah. Yes, my grandmother was Kashubian. Yeah. So, and he said, okay, you know, you want to get a team together. And my name was on. I was like, yes. So, I mean, you, again, bringing all the heritage in was great. And so we were in 2007. So it was great just to be part of that weekend.
But with one team?
Yes.
So whom did you play?
We played the Irish. Oh, yeah. We played the Irish in that.
Women against men?
No. We played. There was two. You know, the gents. There was two levels of them. And then there was a women's team. And we played another women's team.
Right, so. Yeah, but that's what I said. There was a division, a women's division.
But it wasn't just. Yeah. We had to play in that. There was only the two teams. Whichever one won was either Polish or Irish, okay, or Kashubian.
You only played the one game, right?
We only played the one game. Yeah, and then it went, because it was like whoever won the Polish or Irish of the gents, and then the other gents, and then us, decided who won the Polish or Irish, the bowl. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of that, yeah. Okay. It wasn't until we added more teams.
3 years later,
that we then only had the women's division.
Which we now call the Opiongo Heritage Trophy.
Yes.
And then the gentlemen, they're in the...
In the bowl.
In the bowl division. And, of course, the open, as we call it, is for the Opiongo Heritage Cup.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah.
So, Commissioner, what was the response of, first of all, the men privately and publicly to, you know, new competition at the tournament? And by virtue of what I've just heard from you and Marie, it grew very quickly. Because this is 20 years ago, and I can remember times when, you know, the gender split was, yes, well, let them play hockey, but we don't want them playing, you know, under our roof. That wasn't a problem here at all.
Absolutely not. I think that was one of the greatest moves we ever made, was bringing in women's hockey. This definitely added to the tournament. And also, we have to remember, too, we brought in another team in the open division, which was the Algonquin Thunderbirds, right?
So yeah, I remember, Dave, after the first year, you said to me, we got to figure out some way to keep people in the arena because there was big gaps between the games. So it seemed like people would buy a ticket, watch a game, you're going to go home for 3 hours and come back or whatever. So I think that's what you were talking about, filling the gap right through.
Correct.
Which got us to the three gentlemen's leagues, and the ladies is expanding to four. So there was hockey the entire weekend.
And those gentlemen leagues were already established, so it was just a matter of inviting them in.
No, they weren't established.
Oh. No.
We kind of got that going too, eh, Dave?
Yeah, no, exactly. So, there, you know, the first year we only had a few games because it was a three-game round robin.
Yeah.
You know, and it was actually done quick, right? So now if you look at the schedule, you know, we have hockey, you know, all Friday evening, all day Saturday, and mostly on Sunday. Well, we didn't have that from the beginning. So everything that we'd done to add to it, it made this event a whole lot better for the fans because they could stick around and enjoy more hockey.
So two quick questions. One of them is just logistical. As you very happily and wonderfully added three or four, five women's teams, right? Would be that many?
Four
women's teams. What about facilities? Would that cause a little logistical difficulty?
No.
The tournament brings a lot of money into the area. Hotels are all booked. I know my guys, when a tournament was over 1 year, they would book it for the following year because they always knew, Dave said, it was always going to be the last week of March unless it fell on Easter.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm thinking actually about like things like
dressing rooms
and things.
They alternate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was not a problem because I played a lot of hockey tournaments and I remember standing, waiting and all that kind of thing. The second thing I wanted to get back to was great idea to invite the indigenous community. Tell us a little more about where that idea came from, and it seems to have not only developed but prospered.
Like I said, from the beginning, we only had a few games that we were playing, and we wanted to, expand on this. And why not invite the Algonquins? We're playing on their native land. I think this would be a great addition, too. So then it ended up, we have four teams, more games. The women started with two, and all of a sudden it's four, more games. Gentlemen's, did we start with the three?
No, just two.
Now we have three. We have the 30 and over, 40 over, and 50 and over. So if you look at it, we have grown right from that beginning in 2006. And, yeah, I can't believe right at this moment, I don't know if you guys noticed, but when I'm doing the counting on the rosters, there's something like 370 players of all the teams. 370 players. That's amazing, isn't it?
And what would
in one tournament?
What would your estimate be? At least 50% of those players, while they have connections here, are not now living here. Would that be a fair statement?
I had a lot of players on the Irish that never lived here. Yeah. But their families did.
The rule was that you have to have roots here.
You do not
have to be born here. As long as you have roots here. Because this is what it was all about. It was all tied down to, again, the Opiongo line and so on. And people coming in to settle here and so on. But the descendants of those first pioneers, and they're the ones that are playing. And again, it doesn't matter where you're born. If you're born in Vancouver, yet you've got roots here, you have every right to play if you want to come and come here. But what's actually happened now is that if you look at it, probably 70% of the players do not live in the Manawaska Valley. Maybe it could even be more. But what happens is,
for them to do, there's no work here, so they got to be going somewhere else, right?
Yeah. But then all of a sudden, the big words that are being used in this tournament is homecoming. Danny, you can vouch for that, right?
Well, let me run something by you here. So I probably, between maybe Christmas and end of January, get 40 to 50 texts and phone calls wondering what the date of Heritage Cup is for people. And none of our players. People used to come home at Easter. If you've been to Mass lately, see, church is not as full at Easter anymore. So people would always come home at Easter. But Easter was always the weekend before, after, or two weekends. People maybe from Hamilton, whatever, they can't drive up back-to-back weekends. So now they're coming home for the Heritage Cup instead of Easter because they know they're going to see everybody.
You must also, well, I want to go to you, Marie. I noticed you were going to say something a moment ago.
Well, I wanted to go back to something that David discussed about, you know, the continuation of the games and how many players and stuff and bringing more people on. Because I remember the year, that first year that first year I coached. And something that was disappointing but not surprising was when the women would come on, because we played early in the morning or very late at night, people would leave. And I thought, okay, I got to change that. This has got to be, we got to keep them in the arena. So I decided through my contacts to get some of the younger girls that were playing in college and university and up the ante. And I remember in particular that year when the first time I iced a team, that I got a little pushback from one team in particular that said, where are they from? They got their roots here. So we're not no longer playing, you know, chicks, you know, ladies hockey. We're playing girls. It's competitive. And all of a sudden, people were staying to watch. Mm-hmm. And it's really great. I have the roster because my part of the volunteer group is doing the teams and getting the papers ready for them and their armbands and stuff. And I'm looking at the roster thinking, oh, I know some of these girls. Some of them, insofar as they played when my daughters played girls' hockey when I was around. Some of them, that was a couple of them that I taught in First Communion class. And it's like, great, these are young girls out there and they're good for this area, and that's exactly where they get started. So it means that they're coming, and they're bringing a whole new level of hockey right here too, and keeping that interest in girls' hockey locally.
Those girls growing up, sorry, Dave, that are younger, they played minor hockey.
Yes.
When Marie was young, girls did not play minor hockey.
There was no minor hockey.
You couldn't
girls.
Play minor hockey.
No.
So those girls started at a younger age.
And they're good.
The only other girls that didn't play minor hockey, it turned out to be really good, is they had three or four brothers. So they were playing in the pond a lot.
So what about, Marie, just as the numbers and the abilities of the women's team just became more and more obvious and powerful, That must have provided some real incentive to you and others associated with the women's division of the Heritage Cup.
Oh, for sure. Like I said, when I couldn't play anymore, it was important that I wanted to be involved in something. So I did coach for those couple of years. Actually, so much so that I know when they had the in Renfrew. My kids never left. They could not stay home from school for any reason. But boy, I took them all out and drove them down around, and we saw all the games between Erin Pryor and Renfrew. It was something to be seen. And it was really neat for them to see that level where they met people like Kim St. Pierre and that were playing women's hockey early.
So this was international hockey? International
yes.
Women's hockey?
Yes. Ah. It's now, this year it's going to be in Brampton. Love to be there, but but it's really great to see how they have come. And some of these women are employed by the Toronto Maple Leafs, Calgary Flames, some of these players.
So did you say Maple Leafs?
Yes.
Really?
They're, what was it, sports or direct, some kind of direct? Yeah, yeah.
I'm just from the
But, I mean, these are women in these male-dominated positions, and they're good players.
So let me ask David and Dan. One of the problems I could see in trying to organize all of this, and Marie has said it very, very delicately, there comes a point in time when if the entry requirement is perhaps a little too open, what do you do with old Conway, who's 52 and he thinks he's still 17 and he's ready to take on, you know, Davey Keon and Yvonne Cornoyer and young Wayne Gretzky, and the coach over here is saying, "Oh no, we can't have that. We have to segregate here for age and physical ability because it's."
I'll take this one first, Danny. I'm quite surprised that we have not seen Sean Conway, one of the greatest goaltenders that we ever had, playing. Well, and you and I played on the Bulls net. And you had every right to play on the Irish team.
He was asked.
I was surprised that you never did lace up. We have a category 50, and well, we had 55 and over.
Again, he was asked.
I remember for myself, in my 60s, playing against Paul Daly. You probably know Paul Daly and a few other ones. We were up there in 8, but there is a division or a category that we can, so 30... 40 and 50 and over. So take your pick, but it is just too bad that we're not going to see Sean Conway playing in this Heritage Cup, which he has every right to.
You know, it's over 50 years ago. I was walking back very disconsolate after a loss in a playoff round with the Deep River Knights. Remember them, David?
Oh, yes, I do.
And one of my younger brothers said, "Well, there you go. Now you've got a chance to quit while you're behind." And that was good advice, and I took it. Dan, you're...
You were asked, though. Do you remember?
I was asked. No.
Okay, just to clarify that.
Frank Akabuski hauled me out to an old-timers game about 45 years ago, and I'm telling you, that was the one last time I put skates on to face pucks. I thought, just leave well enough alone. Yeah. But how do you deal with, you know, the degree of difficulty, I guess?
And I just delete their phone number.
Yes.
All good inside. The reason this tournament is still going, and I was saying earlier, the average tournament lasts 10 years. No matter how good it is, it's because those guys were playing there, they're gone. Here, when a guy gets to be too old to play in the open, he has the 30 to play in, the 40 to 50. A guy could play in this thing for 25 years, and I'm sure there'll be girls old timers eventually.
Was that a plan going forward? Was that there at the beginning? You anticipated
No, I don't think we anticipated it. It just fell into place. We didn't even know how long this was going to last. Yeah. But I want to, if you don't mind here, I want to also add to this here because, you know, that there's, as people are getting older and they're getting into different categories, let's talk about the excitement from the young people. It is unbelievable how some of these 10-year-old, 12-year-olds are just waiting to get to that age to play in this Heritage Cup. This year, if you look at Marie at on Sunday, we have an under 12. We have the Grizzlies and the Bears, right? They're going to be playing. That is our future. Those kids, if you were to ask them, you know, first of all, I think they'll be honored to play in this event. But at the same time, they are the future, and that is something that we have to look at. So I think this thing can last longer.
So what do you think the appeal of that is? I'm going to go to you first, Dan, and then back to David and Marie.
The appeal of...
Why was it so attractive to kids? Like, you're talking about young people who are not on the ice but want to be there at some point.
I think they want to play for their heritage.
Yes.
Like, we've had guys that have played semi-pro, and as soon as they were asked to play for the Irish, they're like, holy crap, okay, sure. But... I've had the other question, too. Some of the guys, so we had a couple of guys, defensemen, who were 36, 37, and I got a young guy just playing junior hockey. Time to move on, buddy. And they weren't very happy. Mm-hmm. And I always say, well, you know, we got to give them a chance. But I tell you what, if something happens, you're the first guy we call. Meanwhile, you play in the old-timers. And once they got there and more guys coming in, I mean, you got to have 18-year-olds and 35s and work your way up. You don't change your whole team every year. You want to change maybe two or three. But something that just came to my mind was the very first year of the tournament when it was packed and everybody was running around with flags. I remember between periods standing as the guys went into the dressing room and there was kids getting autographs and flares.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Marie? Any thoughts about why the kids who are not yet playing hockey? Because one of the observations you make... You know, when I was growing up here, I was saying to somebody the other day, when you played with the Wolves, we were expected to do refereeing for minor hockey on Saturdays. And I just remember the minor hockey on Saturday at the arena down the street, the old arena down the street here, started, I think, at 6:30 or 7 o'clock on Saturday morning, and I think went right through to about 5 o'clock. And it was just nonstop kids. And
everybody played.
We all know that declining enrollment, we've got many fewer kids between the ages of... you know, 5 and 18 now than we did 50 years ago. But what do you find with young girls? The interest remains very good, Marie?
Well, the interest remains, unfortunately, in my experience, because when my girls wanted to play hockey, my youngest dying to play hockey, you know, they were able to play here, but she wanted to play with other girls. The first year she played, I had to have her in an Eganville team. So I was down there twice a week with game and practice for her to play. Eventually, and she had to play. She was Pee-wee. She had to play she was Adam. She had to play Pee-wee because there was no Adam team. And same thing, when she was Pee-wee, she had to play Bantam. Finally, we had teams here. The Renegades, Barry's Bay Renegades, they were Bantam level and the Pee-wee level. Eventually, midget and Bantam. But again, it lasted a few years. I know because I actually ended up taking a coaching course because we didn't have they needed a backup coach. But I mean, it ran its course. And then we just couldn't keep the interest. So the Heritage Cup is great, but to draw women in, we don't have that division because they don't have the girls play with minor hockey. They don't have that other one to step up to because when that one year that I was coaching, we could take from those midget girls and bring them into the women's games. We don't have that for girls.
Well, let me ask you, Dan. I read the papers and I see hockey teams being referred to, but my impression is that there is not anything like the just like the rep hockey that was here, like the midgets.
From covering them for the paper, minor hockey, there's like 7 teams, not counting the little kids.
Across all age categories?
Yeah.
7?
7.
So
there used
to
be
10, 12
minimal.
How do they organize that? Because you don't even have 2 teams per division in some cases, right?
Or they're in leagues with other teams that can't, don't have.
Like
yeah.
Ottawa, Canada.
Like Pittawawa, Pembroke, they have 3 teams
in the
divisions.
David, you were going to say something?
Yeah, one thing too is, I think this is important, is, why did the kids, why did the young lads, in this case I'm going to say young lads because you just had your point of view on the ladies. My dad played. My dad played in this tournament. I want to play in this tournament too.
Martin?
For Michael.
Oh, I was going to say, Martin should have
played. No, but what I'm saying is someone that is 10, 11, and then they had their father playing in the Open, or they're going to be in the... whatever. Well, this next generation is coming up, and you know what? They want to play for their culture.
So let me ask a two-part question. The second part has to do with volunteers. But so what's your motivation? Like the Heritage Cup. Well, it sounds interesting, but that's going to be a lot of work, and I got to do this, and I got to do that. Starting with you, Marie, is it just that you are an inveterate hockey player that just like you hear the bell and you've got to get the skates on and get out on the ice? Is that, or what's your ongoing motivation?
Well, I've always enjoyed volunteering. I started that when I had daughters and there was like just things that had to be done. And I was that parent, okay, I'll do it. It certainly beats doing housework. But anyways, and when I retired, I signed up with the Station Keepers, okay? And so volunteer there. I volunteered at the seniors building. But when it came up, because we talked to Dave back in 2020. Actually, Dave and I had a whole thing. We were going to do a sort of a women's thing because mm-hmm. there was a team supposed to be going to Kashubia. Mm-hmm. But anyways, and we wanted our group to get in there to do some fundraising. So, okay, Compromare is out this year. So I remember telling Joanne, she said, oh, you know, we need to see what's going on. I said, oh, give Dave a call. So I called Dave and he put me in touch with Mary Rose Dawes for Zarkowski Park because, again, they were locked in at these groups.
And the Joanne you mentioned is Joanne Billings-Olson.
Joanne, yes. And so, and then Rosemary Dawes said, well, just go to the meeting and see what's happening. Well, I jumped in there with both feet right up to my neck. And you know what? But my love of hockey, it says, this is a good thing. I want to be part of that. And let's go for it. Being new at it, it's just another challenge. Yes, it's a brand new challenge in many other ways because I'm used to being in the middle of hockey as opposed to, you know, organizing volunteers and, you know, doing all these other new organizational things. But thank goodness my background helps me to stay organized because I like organization. And we're so fortunate in this area to have so many dedicated volunteers, mind you, aging, but they're still putting themselves out there. And I actually ended up having to get, because we have 22 hours of gate time to fill, and I've got 18 volunteers that are ready to go. And that was the first thing I did. And I really would like to see more and more young, not totally young, but anybody that's got any time, just try. Even a little bit of volunteering helps.
Well, that was going to be a supplementary question to you, and it'll be a question to your two colleagues. Thinking about your obligations to the tournament, which is coming up soon, how many volunteers are you counting on being there to make this all happen? Is it 18? Is it
18 is watching the door. Now, behind the scenes, this being now Carmel Romleski, who did what I'm doing with the teams, the referees, and organizing, roster lists and making sure they get the information, stuff like that, putting all this together. This is the first time I've done this, and Carmel has been valuable in helping me through that. And so hopefully by the time we get there, it's all the prep work beforehand that is a big job. It's been sort of a month of getting all this together. And then the date, it should run smoothly.
Mm-hmm. So Commissioner Shulis, it's 27 years since that first spark triggered your brain to think about what is now a very well-established tradition. Two questions. One, is your motivation still what it was way back then, a quarter of a century ago? That wouldn't it be great to have to connect hockey to heritage and as a byproduct generate some dollars to support the heritage endeavors of various of the communities who participate? Is that still your principal driver?
Absolutely. I don't know, for some reason I just love, I guess in this case, creating events, but hoping that the volunteers step up, because everything, you can have all the ideas that you can muster up, but if you don't have the volunteers and the workforce to go and make it happen, you can forget about. And I want to take this advantage of, too, is that because you've got to remember when I first mentioned there was four heritage groups. There's Wilno, Comamere, Killaloe, and Zarkowski Park, right from the beginning in 2006.
And Zarkowski Park would be essentially what, the Barry's Bay area?
Yeah, but those are the four main heritage groups that started. But two of those groups, Comamere and Wilno, their volunteers are aging, so they've stepped aside. And I have to thank, station keepers to come on board here because they're taking their place because you need a good workforce. A few years back, minor hockey, the Byers Bay area and minor hockey has stepped up. So you still have the four groups because you need that kind of manpower to run this kind of a tournament, right? And outside of those heritage groups, people like Danny and all the general managers and coaches and so on, all voluntary based. None of these people are getting paid for what they're doing because they love their community. And obviously, this is driven by culture, and you can see their passion to play for their culture and that. So I think we do have to make sure that we keep the volunteers strong, because if we don't, we might as well close this event down and all other events.
So Dan, you've been around this a good long time, 14 years a general manager. I noticed in the biographical material I got there was a clear in bold print, and we won the championship 7 times.
I had to throw that in.
Not a hint of boastfulness there.
You should be proud, though, Dan.
Yeah, sorry, I had to.
So let me ask you, we know we live in an age, and Marie spoke the unvarnished truth, it is getting really tough to get and keep volunteers for a whole bunch of reasons. What's your technique for getting and keeping volunteers for a lot of work over a considerable period of time?
That's a good question. I know myself, when I started, when Dave asked me in back in 2006 or 2005, mm-hmm. I got Bernie Finucane as coach, Andy Murray as assistant, and Brian Terrell, BT, as a trainer, and we were together for 14 years, mm-hmm. the four of us, which is pretty good. But, volunteers, and one of the reasons that I'm no longer there is I got 5 grandkids. Mm-hmm. My priorities have changed a little bit. Doesn't mean I don't love hockey, and I won't be there if I'm here. But,
So.
But the next generation needs to step up, right?
Yeah, for volunteers. Players is going to be tough in the future. I mean, families, like we said, are having 2 kids today, not 8. And the kids today, hockey, when we grew up, Marie and Dave, mm-hmm. we had nothing to do. We had 3 TV stations, and one was French, and we didn't speak French. Mm-hmm. What do? We played hockey. Today, hockey's not a priority for the kids, unless their parents are involved.
So let me ask you this. Coming back to the creation, you said, David, Commissioner, mm-hmm. That one of the objectives was to link hockey to heritage, and hopefully in the process of having a really exciting community-building fun time, you generate some coin for redistribution to the various heritage societies that mm-hmm. were working to keep alive the story of yesterday. How well has that gone?
Well, I think it's gone very, very well. I mean, it started as a fundraiser, but really, if you're talking even economic development and so on, I do have to mention also while I'm talking about that, there's 66 businesses that support the hockey program that we hand out to the fans, right? 66 businesses. So, to me, it's like maybe it was, I don't know if it was a crazy idea because not a lot of people, but there was a few people saying that, I don't know, there could be blood on the ice here. There could be, and I didn't look at it that way. I looked at it as that this is a sportsmanship and we need to foster that. And as soon as they hit the ice, that's exactly what happened. But it has become a great fundraiser, a great community event, and economic development, I have to say.
Was the business community sounds like it's been very supportive almost from the beginning.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Dan and then Marie. Marie and then Dan.
Well, for instance, this is our first year in. And as station keepers, we donate our time keeping the railway station, the OAMPA train station here going, and with artifacts and museum about the early settlers. And what we have took on last year was to build a play structure outside at the station park or at the water tower park for people, again, tourism to see, kids to play on. So this money we make, this that we raise, goes right back into the village. It's right back there, and that's what we're doing it for.
So, Dan Conway, what did the Irishmen do with all the money they generated?
Drink it?
You don't make any money.
No, yeah, we don't get any money.
No, no, the teams don't.
That's
make
right,
any
the teams.
Money.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. No, no, this is just the Heritage Group.
Yeah, so that's right.
Sorry. Goes way back into their Heritage program.
Right, that's right. Sorry, pardon.
But this tournament is about. It's more about almost the heritage and getting together. Is this the hockey?
Mm-hmm. Homecoming.
It is. Yeah.
So since when hockey players or people generally get together for a good time, and there is a heritage component to it. You can often generate some really colorful stories. And so I'm going to start with you, Dan, because I think there's one that involved your late father in 2014. Tell that story.
That's
about...
That's one of the few I can tell. But, back in 2014, my dad passed away just before Friday night's game.
And in the middle of the tournament.
Yeah, yeah. The tournament started on Friday, and my dad passed. Mm-hmm. And my brother said, well, you got to go. Dad would want you to not stay here. I mean, nothing you can do. He's passed, right? So I went, and Bernie and the team dedicated the tournament to me and Dad and went out and won every game convincingly. I thought that was pretty cool, just the way they bonded, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's a very good, very nice memory.
And then Mark Yakubowski, who was probably one of the classiest men I ever met in my life, the Friday night game.
This is John Yakubowski's younger brother.
No, Mark, which was Paul's brother.
Oh, Paul's brother, sorry.
The hockey player who passed away a few years
Paul,
back.
Paul Jr.'s son.
Captain Cash, if we call him.
Yeah. I was standing by the glass on a Friday night's game, and during a whistle of the game, he stopped, came over, knocked on the glass, and came over and shook my hand.
Wow.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, right
that
in the middle.
That is touching.
So what is your what's your most touching memory of now almost 20 years?
Wow.
Our most colorful memory.
I just enjoy watching, the fans out there, families more than anything. When I see father, mother, children all dressed up in cultural wear and so on, cheering on their team, seeing some of friends that I have not seen. Basil Billings was one fellow there, right? Every year I would see, never saw him anywhere. Other than at this game, right? Paul Daly, we all grew up. And there was even Conway's there.
I hope Dan Conway here, invited, we know him as GOAT Billings, the late Basil Billings and Paul Daly. Surely they were on your team at some point.
GOAT was 1 year. Paul was on quite a few years.
Marie, and these don't just have to be vivid memories. They can be, oh my God, I can't believe we survived that near miss, or something that was a bigger problem than you ever thought you were going to face, getting your team ready or whatever, and it did get resolved. Is there any memory of that kind?
Well, actually, there is. Having played hockey off and on for 20 years, because from my bio you can say I love my game of hockey, but it was different. Coaching, okay, and I remember that year that I upped the ante, because I had all these Kashubian women that were, I had to have tryouts, and I had practices set up a month in advance when the girls, every second Saturday, that they could come up if they were coming home, and because they wanted to be on that team, they were there, okay? I rented the ice, we had these tryouts, okay? So when we went into that one division where I did have that elite team of really good players. They all were, but I mean, you want to up the ante. When we won that first year, it was felt like the 1973-74 cup that we won back in the WHA. It was like so good. It was like, yes. And I didn't even have to play. But I remember there was a lot of tension on the bench. But, I mean, we won. And it just felt good because now we stood out in this tournament.
Great story. Commissioner, I'm going to give you notice of this. I see Mr. Conway's waving his hands like he was pointing at a referee. But I want to come back to you in a moment with your, to the extent you are willing to answer this question, over nearly 20 years, oh, my God, I can't believe we've got this problem. with so little time before launch. Did you ever have one of those moments? I'll come back to you. You may not have, but just think about it for a moment. Your scariest moment about just getting everything up and going as you would have wanted, and to maybe the big crowd that was coming in a few hours' time, it just looked inevitable. There was not a hint of any difficulty. While you think about that, Dan?
I just thought of something, Dave, that you may not have thought of, and I think it's important. We had the three gentlemen's old-timers, but the first player to ever play to pass away was Mike Murray. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Dave about retiring his sweater. Mm-hmm. And there's never been a sweater retired before that. And it wasn't easy, you know, it was going to affect the lighting and this and that, but we finally got it. And how many sweaters are retired now, Dave?
I think there's five.
And there's never been an arena in Barry's Bay ever, a sweater retired.
Retired.
So that's kind of cool to honor people, especially the first person to pass that played.
Mike was one of the most talented sports guys that ever came out of this town. I remember he played with that great Pembroke Ironman team. You weren't around in the early 1960s, but that was a fantastic hockey team. But
I think that's another thing that was pretty special, though, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, Terry Bojack, the day before. Grace.
So. And Kevin Sarazen.
Well, this year, you'll see in the schedule, we are honoring Carl Lacombe, who was our head of hockey operations right from the beginning. You know, he was the enforcer. We ended up making the rules, and he had to go on and enforce them and that. So we're going to honor him. And I think that's a good addition to this event, because it's actually showing respect, you know, for the hockey people that made a difference.
So 100%. The moment, if there was one over the last 18 or 20 years that caused the commissioner grief...
Sometimes last minute, like just now, I received a call from a person that's supposed to be doing the scorekeeping, cannot make it because of illness and so on. And whatever reason, it could be family reasons or whatever. But there are people in our community that will step up. So that is not really something that I dwell on.
What about referees? How do you arrange the referees? Because again, I remember growing up here, this maybe was equally true of baseball as it was of hockey, but you had to, if you were the commissioner, you had to be careful that you weren't seen to be prejudicing the likely outcome of a game or a series by going to certain referees who may not be as impartial as they should have been. How do you arrange for refereeing?
Well, the thing is, I leave this to Jimmy Gino, Chris Gino. He is our referee in charge, and he does get the referees. One of the things
is he Dennis's son? Dennis Gino's son?
That's correct. And the thing about it is, at first, I remember there was times that we were using some local referees, and it can get touchy here because, you know, look, there's an Irish referee. Mm-hmm. Refereeing an Irish game or a Kashubian referee and so on. So, the odd local referee will be in there, but most of the referees are out of
town.
Yes, well, we don't really like going out of town, but in this case here, I think it's beneficial because I don't want to get into a fight, and not only that, putting them in that position. Can you imagine Sean being a referee and you make a call that determined the game? You could be scarred for life.
I used to referee a lot of minor hockey because I was playing with the Wolves, and I did a lot of it with Frank Jakubowski. And our biggest challenge was what to do with John Jakubowski, who was a good hockey player.
Yeah.
But at 12 years of age, he was a big boy, and he was a handful sometimes on Saturday morning. He was a good hockey player. Marie?
Well, actually, further to that, because Dave and I had this discussion one time when we were coaching, and we talked about referees, okay? And I said, you got to have referees the same for women as... And no, he says, because they're so expensive. And I said, yeah, Dave, but it can get out of hand. He said, these are women. And I said, oh, yeah, it can, believe me. Mm-hmm. And my objective wasn't so much about that as it was, I don't want any... These girls are coming home from school or something. I don't want anybody getting hurt. And we always have that player in there somewhere that's going to, be so kind or, a little shove or something. And I know that you got to keep it tight so nobody gets hurt and they know the rules. You got to be consistent. And women are no different. You put a hockey stick in their hand and a puck on it, and I mean, they're out there to win.
Well, that might be a very good point on which to wrap this up. The audience can't see the look on the faces of the three guests today, but faces are alive with anticipation and excitement, and I just am delighted to see the three of you today. And, you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful March day, and I don't know, everybody at the table has played hockey. And all I remember is growing up in this town and playing a lot of hockey is that you'd get to this time of the year, it was playoff time. You know, not only were you, if you were playing in the minor leagues, or in my case with the Wolves, it was playoff time. The senior league here, that old arena over there, would be absolutely packed. It'd be a grudge match between Eganville and Barry's Bay for the George Cup that would soon end up in Renfrew because they had artificial ice, and the ice would be gone here about now. And or just walking outside and the sun, the March sun is melting natural ice, and the smell is in the air. I still feel it every time I go out on a nice sunny March day that, God, there's got to be a hockey game in my in my day or in my tomorrow. So thank you very much, not only for just doing this, but for committing so many person hours of blood, sweat, and toil to make this happen over nearly 20 years. And you, Commissioner, you're looking, you look better than Gary Bettman looked last night on that Leaf-Colorado hockey game. You have, have you been consulted on the sale of the Ottawa Senators yet?
Not yet, but... As long as they stay in Ottawa, I'll be happy and stuff like that. And they win a Stanley Cup before Toronto Maple Leafs do.
Well, I don't think that latter point. Well, and I don't. Let's not encourage Dan Conway because this.
Yeah, I think so too.
Did you see they have nine buyers?
And yes.
It's going to go for $1 billion, which has been the most of any team ever been sold.
Yeah, that's what I. Well, certainly Bettman didn't say it in so many words, but he certainly sounded like. Except those of us who are just regular people, we have to pay those ticket prices. And their dynamic pricing now, which is whatever they think they can take out of your pocket, they will take you to the to the sky. But however, listen, thank you so much. Good luck with Heritage Cup 2023. And may this tournament be at least as successful as the best you've had to date. So to Marie Villeneuve, to Dan Conway, and to Commissioner Dan David Shulist, my old defense protection in the Madawaska Wolves of yesteryear. Thank you, one and all.
You saw number three all the time, right in front of you, buddy.
Happily so.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Sean Conway, host of The Local, in conversation with Marie Villeneuve, David Shulist, and Dan Conway. And as you can guess from their conversation, nearly everyone local will have hockey on the brain this coming weekend. So, if you can get to the Paul J. Yakabuski Community Center on 65 Arena Road in Barry's Bay, by all means, get out there and cheer for your team. No matter if it's a men's or women's team, young or old, Algonquin, German, Irish, or Kazubian. Better still, as you heard, the good people who bring you the Opiongo Heritage Cup each year sure could do with some more help. So why not plan on offering up a helping hand, don't you know? And make this area a bit more of what it's always been, hockey crazy. I'm Kristen Marchand, and for my producer, Barry Conway, we'd like to thank Marie Villeneuve, David Shulist, Dan Conway, and our host, Sean Conway, for taking the time today to explain how our local hockey curiously got all mixed up with our local heritage and unique culture here in the Upper Madawaska and Opiongo River Valleys. Good day, and God bless.